fuck. Welcome to the World Wrestling Podcast with Matt, Josh, and Chris. We got everything on the go. We're going to be talking today all about AEW Revolution and all things AEW. We've had a couple that were very pro WWE podcasts in the past, but coming off probably one of the best pay-per-views of the year so far, even though we're only in March. Or what are we? Are we even in March? We're in March now. But Chris, with that being said, where can everybody find us online? How can they subscribe to us? Please tell us how they can find us on Feet Finder as well.
Oh, Feet Finder is doing really well. We've opened up our own OnlyFans. Just kidding. No, we haven't. But you can find us on primarily our most popular areas, YouTube. Like and subscribe because it helps us and it gets us in your feed so that you can know whenever we release a new episode. And of course, we are still on every major podcast platform, Google, Apple, Spotify, anywhere you can get your podcasts, you can get us.
Yeah, and if you don't like and subscribe, we'll fucking kill you with kindness.
Yeah, so I'm tired of crying at this age.
Yeah, me too. It's kind of sad being, you know, I'm going to say 30, 34, but I'm not even 34, so it doesn't matter. But anyways, Josh, some football news, obviously big on the trade deadline in the sports industry this week. And we heard from the Denver Broncos that basically Russell Wilson would be released. And I heard in that deal, he only really lasted, what, a year or two. And there was eight players. I think it was five picks and three players that basically got traded to the Seahawks in that deal for 2 years of Russell Wilson. And in your case, in all of sports, you can pick anything you want. What is the worst trade, in your opinion, in sports history?
Broncos country, let's ride.
Oh, Jesus. Worst trade. Oh, you know what? I'm not good with that kind of stuff, to be honest with you. Worst trade for the Padres, trading Alomar and Joe Carter to us. That's the worst trade for them because we won the championship for the Blue Jays because of it. But I would say, I don't know, worst trade, who fell through?
Vince Carter to the Nets, and Alonzo Mourning didn't even play for us.
I think you can even say, yeah. The funny thing is, Josh, I think you can even look recently to a lot of the Padres trades for them to try and get into, you know, a World Series and still can never do it, right?
Oh, yeah. Was it Max Scherzer? Didn't he get traded and then got injured almost immediately? Was that one that happened? But I mean, like, long term, he'll be good.
I think one that wasn't a trade is like the Aaron Rodgers thing after being injured after a play, but that wasn't really a trade, right?
That the big thing from sports, though, is it wasn't the guy at the combine. He doesn't believe in space.
Oh, yeah. What an idiot.
I don't believe in space.
Oh. I hope he's good. I hope he's real good at football.
I usually don't put my two cents in on these, but I'll give you mine. I'm going to say that it was basically Eric Lindros being traded to the Flyers for somebody that ended up being better than him and Peter Forsberg. And I think there was six players in that deal that they got. And eventually they became like two-time Stanley Cup champions at that point with all the core in that roster from that deal. So
should have been the Nordiques though.
Yeah. So much for, see what happens when you don't want to play for Quebec. That's what happens, right? So it'll be interesting to see if Quebec, there's rumors about a franchise showing up in Quebec in the NHL, which will be interesting if that actually happens and to see if that goes down. But we're not here to talk about the Nordiques. We're not here to talk about La Belle Province. We're here to talk about AEW Revolution 2024, which came through. And Revolution always seems to be AEW's strongest pay-per-view. With the debacle that was basically World's End and what happened there, this was a really, really strong showing. And we're going to talk about this after, but we're really going to kick off by talking about three of the best matches of the night. And surprisingly, one of the matches we previewed was actually going to be like Joe. I think it was Samoa Joe. It was Hangman Page, and it was Swerve. Decent match, but there was three better ones than that. We're going to kick it off with Danielson and Eddie Kingston for the Continental Championship or the Triple Crown Championship, whatever the fuck you want to call it, that those three titles that he had. And this turned into almost like, Josh, you said it best in the text message. It was almost like a shoot fight. It was very much like Japanese strong style at its best, and almost a tribute to that. And this was an absolute banger. There was probably about 400 chops that happened, a bunch of kicks, submission holds, a whole bunch of crap. Now, Josh, you saw this. What would you say looking at this whole match in the beginning? And Danielson is always going to be a draw, but I really feel like Eddie Kingston really picked it up here. Does this solidify him more now as that Continental Crown champion, beating Brian Danielson, especially after how strong of a tournament he had to win the titles?
Yeah, I don't really like Eddie Kingston. It's hard to say. Look, I like Eddie Kingston on the mic. He's great in the ring. I'm never a big fan of his look, which is fine. Like, he's a good wrestler. He's good for what he is. I think that this match was fantastic, and I for sure Eddie Kingston is, you know, he has solidified himself in that position. The match there, just like you said, Matt, I said that I thought it was a shoot. How hard Danielson was kicking him was like he was mad at him, and it was like almost like, and we've seen Danielson's kicks, and it's just, this was almost like it was harder than I've ever seen before. I think for me, with Eddie Kingston, the trouble is always just that, like, he just doesn't remind me of a wrestler. He doesn't look like a wrestler, and that's okay. But I just think, like, if you're going to try to build a bigger audience around him, it's hard because, like, there's a lot of that, like, true wrestling, not the true wrestling fans, but, like, the other wrestling fans who are, like, more of a traditionalist who don't buy into the Eddie Kingston persona. And so, like, he's not getting over because of his physical look. So his personality's got to get him over. And there's a lot of people that his personality would turn off. But I really enjoy his storyline. And I think that, like, you know, he's not a face to me. So, like, I'm happy to hate him because I like his character. It's just, he's not my cup of tea, but that's great because, like, I think he has a great spot. And the fact that he has a championship makes me want to watch him get beat up. And, like, the way that they did the match, like, it was really like a good body of storytelling. And I know that, Matt, that's what you always say about Eddie Kingston. He's always telling a great story. And, like, the fact that he wasn't using his right hand because it was injured early, right? Like, he kept playing that and going on. And, like, the injuries kind of felt real. And then, like, even at the end with Danielson, like, not going to shake his hand, but, like, teasing it. But then he shook his hand. And it was a good part of the story. I would have been okay, though, if Danielson shook his hand and then stomped on his hand a bunch more times and, like, continued to be a heel with it. Like, gave him his respect, was like, go fuck yourself. Like, I'll shake your hand because I have to. I guess he's on his tour of finishing up with everybody. So this might be the last big match he has with Eddie Kingston.
Yeah, I think it's just a time frame thing on why that possibly didn't happen. I think, you know, Chris, like, I think the Bleacher Report said that this was like a war of attrition, and that's a direct quote when I was reading one of their articles. And, you know, in a lot of cases, I think a lot of people, when they kind of watch this match first compared to the other two matches we're going to talk about after, they probably would have said at one point that this was probably going to be the match of the night. Until we saw some other matches afterwards. Now, Eddie is great with storytelling. His emotional intelligence when it comes to dealing with a crowd is great. And there's a lot of scenarios where he does rub people the wrong way. Do you agree with Josh in the sense that his physicality, in the sense of his physical attributes, not necessarily his physicality of violence, holds him back in the eye of just maybe a more casual wrestling fan?
Yeah, I get what Josh, like, he's just not pleasing to watch, if that makes sense to either of you two. Like, it's not that it's clunky, it's just not pleasing to watch. I love the match, to be honest. I thought it was a good match. I'm happy Kingston went over. I like him with these belts. I mean, you can put him with anybody, and yeah, like, promo wise or causing a feud or making it like a blood feud, he can do that with anybody. But yeah, it's like I'm not a fan either, but I became more of a fan. Like, I thought he looked better against Danielson than he has, like, in other matches. I thought this was his best match in the ring, but yeah, it's a little off-putting. It's not the way he looks. It's kind of the whole packaging and the way he conducts his moves in the ring. I mean, he probably has the best no sell. Because, like, he no sells, but he still makes you think it hurts. But he still knows. He doesn't just get up and pop up. He looks, seems like, oh, it's a good one, you know, and give me another one. So that I really like about him. But yeah, he's in the ring watching him wrestle. It's a little off putting. So it's kind of It's hard to get behind him. It's hard for me, like, especially a casual fan. It's hard to get behind him.
Yeah.
Can I?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just you saying the no sell piece, Chris. It triggered something in me, and I think that might be one of the things that I, not to say I don't like about Eddie Kingston, but that like rubs me the wrong way about his character is the no sell. And because there's so much no selling going on lately, it's hard to watch. And maybe it's just because like I grew up watching Warrior, and it was like, I believe Warrior are no selling those things, you know, like, and maybe it's just the believability with him not no selling it, with him no selling it. But I agree that the match is fantastic. I'm sold on him. It's just that there's something about him. And maybe that for me, that part of the hit, that persona of the no sell, it's like, yeah, man, like you look like that hurts a little bit more than, you know, like anybody can no sell. But anyways, you just had just a thought that I had right there.
But he does it in a way where he takes the shot and he's no selling, but he's showing you that he's like, oh, that was a good one, right? He's not just getting up and like he's staying down. He can't get up, right? So he gets kicked in the chest. He's not getting right back up. He's selling it that he can't get up and that it hurts, but he's still there raring to go. But yeah, and he had a couple, right? You hit him, he turns around, he hits you with that. The shot, but I think he does it better. He does the no sell better than a lot of people.
Fair. Well, and you know, not that I like to talk about people's looks, but if you were ugly, how would you get over? You're gonna have to prove that you're tough at some point. Yeah, maybe, but you're gonna have to prove no matter what it is that you're tough at some point. Like Chris, I think the words you're looking for is not clunky. It's not aesthetically pleasing. And you know what? He's not gonna pull off an RKO off the top rope that everybody's gonna go, holy fuck! Like look at that. Look at the athleticism. Because he's not. He's not that guy, right? He's pure emotion. He runs off promo skills. And yeah, he's just. The sad part about Eddie Kingston at the end of the day is that he's a good professional wrestler. He's good. He's believable. He has to use that no sell in a way to prove that he's tough because his athleticism is so, I don't want to say poor, but it's mediocre at best compared to everybody else. Like Danielson can do, you know, if you ask him, he's going to do moonsaults. He could probably do a 450 splash. He can do stuff off the rope. He can do, you know, maneuvers that will put him into like, you know, whatever it is, the calf killer and all that stuff and all these different submission holds, and Eddie just doesn't have those things. And that's I think why when you look at Eddie Kingston and why he wasn't a WWE fan and why he's a Japanese wrestling fan, because if he was ever going to get into those things, it was going to be based on those terms, right? So in a lot of cases, I agree with both of you. I think when you look at this match, it was great. The Biseko knees looked real. Like, everything just looked real. And I think, like, that's what it was. It just looked like two guys who hate each other in a ring, in a fight. And to tell a story like that in a wrestling ring where everything is choreographed must be insanely tough. And I think they did a really, really good job. So, Josh, what would you give a grade of that if you were looking at that match early on in the night? What would you give that grade maybe early on in the night? And what would you give it now after looking back on it and talking about it?
I mean, if we're using the S tier, I would say it was an A+, A plus, right? Like, I mean, if S plus is the best, then I would say A+ for this match. I thought it was great. I definitely, you know, reading reports that it's like a match of the year contender, and which at the time it was a match of the year contender, and I'm not saying that it can't be a match of the year contender, but you know, the next match or the match following that we talk about is probably the match of the year so far for sure, in my opinion. But yeah,
Chris, what would you give A+. it as a ranking when you were sitting there?
Both ways at the time and then after I looked at it, I'd say B+. I thought the striking at the start didn't really do it for me. Like the leg kicks, and then Kingston was throwing leg kicks too. That didn't do it for me. If they got to a start that was a little bit better, I probably would have gone A or A+. But for me, it's a B+.
You know what? I actually had it as a B when I first watched it because I agree. I think the start could have kind of just been a little bit more slow and drawn out, have them chirp a little bit more, and then really have a little bit more of a build up there where kind of just went in and started with the chops right off the bat, and then the chops ended up all the way through. So I'm kind of torn. I had it between a B+ and an A. So I know that there is no tier for that. I'll probably go on the lower end just because it was a B+. But it, you're right. At the time, Josh, probably a match of the year contender for what we've seen, even only being in March, right? But
right.
Josh already got there and said it. He goes, the next match we're going to talk about is probably right now the match of the year if we had to pick it. And it probably was something that was a little, like, not that it was off the charts that we thought it could be that. It ended up being a way better match than we ever thought it was. And that was Will Ospreay against Konosuke Takeshita. And, you know, just unbelievable match. We saw Tiger Driver 91. We just saw move after move that the crowd was into it. We had multiple standing ovations. The crowd was all over it for Ospreay. He was flying around the ring. He had the back blade. He was doing, trying to do everything to put Takeshita away. And the key was here is that Takeshita didn't back down. Like, there was a lot of really hard hitting in this match. And I don't know if, like, you know, you're not going to come away from a match like that without being sore after what we saw. Like, there was some really hard hits, a couple times where you thought maybe even one guy was, like, partially kind of unconscious trying to stand up, just because that's how hard it was. And it was just an ongoing, exciting match with basically, I couldn't fucking believe it. I think I said fuck in that match probably about 12 times. And the only match I can really compare it to from what we've seen was the one that we saw at Forbidden Door, right? But Josh, you looked at this match, and I kind of want to, we all know what Will Ospreay can do. We've seen it. Like, we've seen it numerous times. We've seen it in the flesh. The amount of accolades he has from, you know, six and a half star matches, six star matches. He's the most highly rated, you know, star wrestler when it comes to Dave Meltzer. This match probably, I don't even know what this match got. I'm going to say this was an easy six. Easy six. But my question to you is, were you surprised at how well Takeshita performed in this spot for being how young he is? And we've seen it so many times with Japanese wrestlers where, you know, the last real Japanese killer we saw is probably Shinsuke Nakamura. Before that, Yoshihiro Tajiri. And probably before that, maybe, Chris, you're going to know the guy in ECW that held the title there. Started with Masato Tanaka.
Those
are the three that I think are the Japanese killers. Is there a new sheriff in town with Takeshita being as young as he is from what we saw in that match?
Oh, wow. Takeshita, holy crap. Is he ever an athlete? I mean, former decathlete, almost in the Olympics, if not in the Olympics. I think that, like, one of the things that might be holding him back is just the language barrier for some of the wrestlers to try to run a match like that. Like, you need to have great communication in the ring to have that match. And he's got the physical ability. Like, I would say that, like, him, Kenny Omega, Will Ospreay, Danielson, John Moxley, like, those are guys who could have, like, the best match of the year almost consistently. Like, you put some of those guys in there, and, like, he's part of that group now, in my opinion. He hit hard. He sells. Like, I thought he died twice. Like, when he did the, like, his face, he was like this. He got hit, and he was like, oh, and I thought
his
it was
hands,
like, it looked like,
his hands,
it looked like
he
had
his
a seizure.
Hands, like, clenched in.
I'm a registered nurse. What he did is a reaction. I'm a healthcare professional. What he did was a reaction that I was like, oh, fuck.
Do you think he researched that?
It was just the way that I think that the way that he landed, the way that his fingers went, it was like, if he's really hurt, that could be what he looked like. And then the other time, I think he was just a little gassed out. But when the Tiger Driver 91 hit, his face looked a little ashen to me, a little gray. I thought he died. He was like, that joke. I was like, oh, fuck. He fell on his head and he died because the way that he landed, there was a shadow hitting his face and he looked gray. And I was like, oh my God, that's a dead person. We just watched a death. And I'm like, and you know, it's funny. That is the first time that night that I thought I witnessed a death. And then the second time happened later. But like, holy fuck, what a match that was. I am very impressed with Takeshita. I look forward to continuing to see his work. I wouldn't be surprised if WWE tries to get him in the near future, because like, he could be the greatest Japanese wrestler that we see in the future. I'm not saying that he is right now, but I think that like, if he keeps up and he doesn't get hurt, he could potentially be the best Japanese wrestler that we've seen.
Chris, I'm going to hold off on you here just for one second because I'm going to agree with that statement. I think with his age and the potential that he has and for what we saw in that match, is the question is, how can he do that five or six times a year? And the question is, who can he do it with? Now, Now I'm going to reel it into Chris. Chris, you know that I'm the host and I'm here to ask the hard-hitting questions, the real hard, complex questions that we have here. My question is, we can see Takeshita do it with Ospreay, but could Takeshita do it with anyone? That's my question to you at this point.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's really done well since he came into AEW. And we do see Japanese wrestlers struggle quite a bit when they come stateside. But for him, like he's kind of there's been no stop to his momentum. He's been looking good the whole time. Sorry, can you repeat that? I went on a tangent.
No, it's just
there.
Like so the question is like what we're talking about is like Takeshita is gonna have those matches with Omega and Ospreay because very good chance Omega and Ospreay are gonna call those match. Now can Takeshita call that match and have the same type of match? Let's not say a 6-star, but could he let's say have a 5-star with like a Christian Cage or somebody that's kind of in, not to say that Christian Cage is bad, but kind of that one level down that would really have that match going the way it should be. Could he call the match at his age and be strong as or close to strong of what he had as a match with Will Ospreay? That's my question.
Well, I don't know. It's tough to say because everybody who has a match with Ospreay is good. So you have to imagine that a lot of that is Ospreay because if those matches are all good, it's a lot of it is him. He is young. Like if we put him with somebody else who's green, do they try to do too much, right? Do they try to do too much to impress? So do I think he could do it with everybody? I don't think so. I don't think he could do it with everybody. I think with solid veterans or really good wrestlers, he could do it with. But I think if you put him with somebody else who's up and coming and you know, young, I think maybe, you know, the spot might get to him, but then again, he wrestled Ospreay at a big pay-per-view and that spot didn't get to him. So, you know, I guess for me, it remains to be seen because I've seen him wrestle. He's been with a lot of really good workers so far. So I guess until we see him with somebody who's, you know, either new or, you know, would have to, people who have to be like a Jericho, like where he had to carry him in the ring, I'd have to reserve my comment until I see more.
My last question is for you two is that I want a one liner from you. What is the best spot if you were booking at this point to put Konosuke Takeshita right after this match? Where does he go from here? One line, Josh.
Oh, fuck.
Chris, Eddie Kingston.
Come on now.
Chris, you go ahead.
I was going to say the same thing.
I was going to say, you know what? It's fucking hilarious. I was going to say the same thing. I think the next step for him is give him the Continental Championship and let him run with it. You know, because I think going after maybe, or the other thing that I have is really having him go after a fan favorite to solidify his heel stance. So go after somebody like Orange Cassidy and really have Cassidy kind of get fucked up and give Cassidy a little bit of a break so that he can come back and do something different because it's getting a little stale, just a little bit. But you have him run him over Orange Cassidy. I don't think the AEW fans are going to like you very much. Now, last question about this. Josh, what's the grade that you give the match? Is that an S-tier match for you?
Oh, yeah. I think it was almost as good as the match that we saw at Forbidden Door. I would say that it's like six stars potentially for me. Some of the spots were better than the match that we saw at Forbidden Door. I just think that the Forbidden Door was a little bit, had better storytelling and it had a few better spots for me, but so the what these two guys did to their bodies and what they were like, how they acted and how Takeshita acted made it a better match for me. Like, because you expect to see this out of Will Ospreay. And when Ospreay came out of this as like he came in as a face. Like, it's, I know that he's part of a heel faction, but that turn is coming, baby. And I think Takeshita, you could see just him and Takeshita. I'd be okay with them feuding. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Kyle Fletcher tonight. So,
Josh, I'm going to get you to do one thing as the resident statistician. I'm going to check this. I want you to see if that Dave Meltzer rating is up for that match, if he can. It's not
already
up yet.
Did. It's not. Okay. Elimination Chamber just got dropped a couple days ago.
Okay, cool. So, Chris, S-tier match for you. Is that the match of the night, match of the year so far?
Oh, yeah. Match of the year, match of the night. S-tier for sure. I'm just, it, It's crazy. Like, I'm just a bigger Takeshita fan every time he goes out. Like, every time he goes out. So one of the other problems is that, like, he's got to stay consistent and top that every time, because right now, but yeah, S tier, they worked really great together. And the crowd was, I love the crowd. The crowd would be quiet, like a Japanese crowd, during kind of the build up, and then, and then something big would happen and they'd get jacked. So yeah, it was, man, like, if that's the match of the year, we're only in March. That's, the bar has been set pretty goddamn high.
Yeah, that's definitely, I think, for all of us, that's an S-tier match. I think I think with all the ups and downs, and just, I think when we've been doing this so long and we're left mind blown from a match, and Josh, we're talking about before, like the little things, like the curled up fingers, the sleight of hand, the stuff like that. It was a masterpiece. And I think that's really what it is. And it's like, if we could hang this in an art gallery, this would probably be one of the masterpieces that we'd be hanging up in the main room. Well, that's how good it was. And AEW created a star. They took a star that was already the best wrestler in the world, and they made that star bigger in North America for the first time. That's almost a double win for AEW at this point. And that's going to be big for them moving forward as well. Now, we're going to come into the main event of the evening, which is obviously a very nostalgic one for a lot of people when we're going in. Not nostalgic in that the match just happened a week ago, but just the nostalgia that Sting provides. Tornado tag match for the World Tag Team Championships with Sting and Darby Allin and the Young Bucks. Josh, I don't even really care who won this match, but who won this match?
Sting.
Yeah, you know, and kind of a shock there with, you know, Sting and Darby retaining the titles. Basically, Sting goes undefeated in AEW, and him and Darby end up ending their careers basically as an undefeated tag team, if I'm not mistaken on those statistics. But just an unreal night for Steve Borden, also known as Sting, well into his 60s, still performing at such a high level, as both of his sons come in a very unconventional tornado tag match. A little 4-on-2 with the two sons coming in. But I think at the end of the day, this match was well presented. Lots of crazy shit. Josh, we'll get you talking about the Darby Allin spot there in a second, but, you know, just well done. The Young Bucks were phenomenal as always when they have to put on that show, especially as heels. They did a fantastic job, and what a great way to end the show. And basically a send off on an absolutely amazing career for Sting. And hopefully AEW will be able to retain him as a producer or something moving forward. And, you know, hopefully he gets a nice vacation for after this. And Tony sends them to Turks and Caicos for a while. But Josh, let's just talk about the elephant in the room. Darby Allin on a 25-foot ladder on a over four chairs into a pane of glass. What'd you think when you saw it? And did Darby outdo himself, and are you surprised that he actually survived it?
It's funny because I was thinking, I'm like, oh, Darby's got a huge hard on right now. Like, that's just like, this is what he likes to do. Like, this is his kink. Like, I'm pretty sure he just is like, I want to jump through a pane of glass because it's going to get my rocks off. Like, the spot was so unnecessary that, like, I don't understand. When they started bringing out the panes of glass, I'm like, there's got to be fake. And I know that they weren't fake because it started to be fucking Allin in there. And, like, it's Tony Khan. He's letting them do whatever they want. But at the same time, it's like, holy shit. Like,
I thought it was candy glass at first.
Yeah. And because they did that recently with the beer bottle, right? Like, they smashed a beer bottle over someone's head, and that was for sure. Like, you're not smashing a real beer bottle over someone's head. I'm sorry. If you're doing that, then, like, maybe I shouldn't watch the product, because I really don't want to see someone get CTE. We don't need another Chris Benoit or, you know, like, Hernandez, like, all those guys. But, wow. Like, just, you're setting Sting off with a death match, and there's one person dying. Like, and it's Darby Allin. And, like, when he got up, and, like, you look at his back, like, every shard of glass pressed into his back. And, like, it wasn't even, like, it was just chairs. Like, why not stack a couple tables with a pane of glass over it? It probably would have had the same effect. He basically fell to the ground, like, without, like, the glass didn't slow his momentum down anymore. Like, he's lucky he's walking. And, like, I know that that's kind of his thing, but Jesus Lord Almighty, I don't
the and problem it was that immediate, happens with
these, like as soon as he turned around, you could just see the like yeah, the blood, the spots of blood, just like his whole back. All of a sudden, little spots of blood just started leaking. Crazy.
The problem with this in the long run is that, you know what, I had a father who's a professional athlete, and to see basically
Bill Kazmaier,
World's Strongest Man, who's not my actual dad, but that's his nickname. That's what we call him. But, you know, that guy broke his wrist. He had ankle problems. He had everything. And it's amazing to see how much these injuries caught up to him in his 70s, right? I don't think Darby Allin's going to live that long, but can you imagine what his life's going to be like in his 70s when his body just starts absolutely kind of breaking down, when we go through, like, time waits for nobody. And, you know, at time, your body degenerates, and all these people that have injuries, like, it breaks down. He's going to be like, he's going to suffer that in his 40s if he's lucky and doesn't get it in his 30s, right? And so, as much as we're all appreciative for all the stuff that he puts his body on the line for, you know, is it really necessary? Like, he could do other things that, you know, could be less risky that would still have the same impact. Because at the end of the day, my question to you guys is this: Chris, are you really going to remember this as Sting's going away? Or are you going to remember this as Darby going off a 25-foot ladder?
It's hard being a WCW fan for so long, and like it's hard not to think of this as Sting's send away. But yeah, like, I'm never going to forget that spot. Just like Josh said, that's like, you're going to remember that just like when Hardy went off the ladder for the first time in TLC. But like, I just wanted to add on to like what you said about Darby. Like, he's made this his thing. He can't go back now to be a technical wrestler. Like, he has to do, but you know what I mean? He has
technical to do this wrestler.
Now. Well, no,
like, he's never been a fucking technical wrestler.
I know, but it's like with Jeff Hardy. If they stop doing the stunts, they're irrelevant all of a sudden. So I don't know. I wish he didn't have to do this to get a paycheck. You know what I mean? Like, it's.
He does it for fun. He's blowing up his house for fun. He's flying. Like, this man is he's a stuntman, right? Like, if not, he'd just go work in stunts. He wants to he looks like Peter Pan with his little tights that he makes himself, which is great. I like Darby Allin, but he for sure makes his own
costume. But he's burning the candle at both ends.
For sure. Now, my question really becomes, like, Josh, like, with what Chris said, can you really picture, you know, Darby Allin doing a cravat and a three-handled family credenza, like, as a technical wrestler? Like, I don't fucking see it. Now, Chris, I was going to ask you my original question, which is a little more risque. Would you like me to ask it? The moss-covered
three-handed family credenza.
You got a moss-covered three-handled family whatever, fuck. It's little, 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 little. Yeah. Now, my original question was risque. Would you like me to ask you that question, yes or no?
That's
for you, Chris.
Oh, yes or no what? Sorry.
Okay, holy fuck, are you listening? Like, basically, yeah, I said my original question that I had for you was risque. Do you want me to ask you that question now? I'm going to give you the option, yes or no.
Yes.
Okay, so if you saw what Darby Allin did, if Darby Allin, and you had to compare Darby Allin's kink to the kinks that you know in your sexual vocabulary, what kink do you think Darby Allin is his favorite?
Pain, for sure.
Josh, do you agree it's pain, or would you say it's just BDSM?
He'd be that guy in the pain Olympics that holds like 10 pounds off his nits.
Obviously. I was going with auto asphyxiation. Anyways, that's not what we're talking about. It sounds like pain, though. It feels like pain.
But... It's pain or it's suffering. One of the two.
Oh, man. So total package when we're looking at everything. You got the Young Bucks, the whole kit and caboodle, the whole main event, Sting send-off, even the press or whatever else. Josh, what do you give the grade for this?
I got to give it an A+. It's Sting's retirement match. It's a once in an only thing, and Sting is a once in a lifetime wrestler. You think about, he had two very short runs in WWE, nothing of real prominence, made his ends meet in secondary promotions his whole life, and is worldwide known by everybody. And like, it's just, we're not going to get to see something like this again. I mean, maybe we will, because we're going to see Jericho retire, maybe, but like, it's not the same, because Sting, I think, He's one of the last, like, from the original, like, from Hogan era, right? Like, from that, it's like, the 80s are over. No, you know, like this is kind of it. And Sting is the last of it. That's how I feel, at least that I remember.
Chris, what's your grade for this final match? Because, I mean, when you even compare it, like, I would agree. I would have to – I'm going to give you my grade first. You're going to have to put it up there as at minimum a B+. Because if you rewatched Ric Flair's, like, third retirement match that he had, no offense to Jay Lethal, but Rick was, like, in his 70s and couldn't do anything. And that was, like, a D for me. And Jay Lethal carried him the whole way. His performance gets about a B+ or an A- for me. So where do you rank this one?
I'm going to go with Josh on an A+. And, I mean, like, Sting could keep doing it when you watch him. The way they've booked him in AEW, he could have kept going, but... yeah, it's just like Josh said, like the send off, it's like, this is officially the end of an era. None of these guys are going to be working anymore. A plus, like, just again, like, just to talk about when we went to Toronto, we got to see Sting live. That's super cool. So yeah, I mean, this whole pay-per-view was all about Sting, and you kind of saw it, like, it was a banger of a pay-per-view. They really needed to make up for World's End, and I think they did. And I think one of the big reasons for that was that everybody was like, we got to make this show good for Sting.
That's the next topic.
Oh, okay.
So the big thing, the last thing I'll put in this match when we go through is that I want you to think about one thing when he went across. Goldberg's streak went to like 170 fucking whatever and zero, and they had to tout it every single time. Sting went undefeated in AEW, and they didn't even have to say a goddamn word about it because nobody fucking cared. It was just Sting that was there doing his thing day in and day out. Fucking unbelievable to think of that. That's the glaring takeaway of what Sting brings to this business. Against somebody like a Goldberg, who was a flash in the pan, that he'll be in the Hall of Fame, but he's not a Hall of Fame wrestler by any means. To what
no, he's,
any
of us. He's terrible. He's like, no, just fucking awful. Right.
Now, we talked about World's End being so goddamn terrible. That was the worst pay-per-view, probably. Meltzer, I think the WON Awards basically had it as the worst pay-per-view of the year, the worst wrestling event of the year. And then we come into Revolution, and it ends up being like this complete fucking banger out of nowhere. And, you know, so we're going to get to the great else, but let's look at a couple other areas in the card. Like, I mean, Chris, you're a big Tony Storm fan, and I know that we were talking about that match, and you know what, we've always talked about the AEW's women's division just slightly lacking. You know, there's been a lack of Britt Baker, Cargill moved to WWE, you know, and some great women have been coming in there and filling the void, but Toni Storm's gimmick is something else. Deonna Purrazzo, I had my comments in the preview, and I thought she actually performed really well. What were your thoughts on this match, just as a one-off? We'll just go match by match, Chris to Josh, and until we get to the final grade here.
Did we talk about it? Yeah, I think on our messaging stuff, like, I was happy with it. It was a women's match that I think ran pretty well. There's a lot of chain wrestling. Don't often see women doing chain wrestling in AEW, but I thought they did a great job. And like, Toni Storm is Toni Storm. We've seen people try to run this act for a long time, and they usually don't last long enough to get a championship and keep it going. So, and Purrazzo looked good. She looked good in the ring. It was good. It was a really nice kind of refreshing thing to see that, you know, they spent time with the women's match, and the women's match came up well. Like, it wasn't a smoke break match. It wasn't something like that. It was a good match. And I mean, they have history too. So like the buildup was okay. Didn't really catch me like as much as, was it Saraya and Toni Storm?
Yeah. There's a couple of them. Yeah.
So that felt like there's a little more history behind that. But I thought, like, overall, I'd give that match B. I'd give it a B. I was happy with it. And my girl Toni came out with the title still. And yeah, I mean, she's working this gimmick hard. And I think she's getting everything she deserves right now.
You got it. Josh, thinking about Roderick Strong and Orange Cassidy, Roddy takes the title, but Kyle O'Reilly has a big comeback. What were your thoughts about that match with the title change and everything going on with that? And what do you rate it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I was happy to see a title change, even though Roddy Strong's kind of whatever for me. He's a good, you know, in-between wrestler for the next guy. Hopefully their story gets better. I'm not really clear that that's going to happen. Maybe once MJF comes back, if he comes back. The match was fine. It did well. It's good to see Orange Cassidy not have the title. I think he needs to have a run where he doesn't have a title. Just, you know, he's a huge baby face. He doesn't need to have a title as long as he did. You can still have him winning, maybe move him a division into the heavyweight title contention. Maybe that's what you're setting him up for. Kyle O'Reilly coming back, he kind of looked like he was, like I was saying, he looked like Smeagol. Like him and Pac could be the Smeagol faction, where they, you know, they both look like they've gotten a little wet and they've been like malnourished for a little while, just based on like their, you know. But it looked
like he was just dug up from the grave.
Yeah, like it looked like he hasn't seen the sun in a while. And Kyle O'Reilly's not a very tan person. He's Irish background, clearly. And, you know, good Canadian boy. And I like Kyle O'Reilly. I'm excited to see him back. But, like, it was kind of lackluster the way that he appeared, just because he looked so sickly. Like, that's kind of all it was. Like, it was a big reveal. He hugged Roddy, say, like, hey, I'm not going to be with you, clearly. And then, like, hopefully he feuds. I don't know who he's going to feud with. If he's feuding with Roddy Strong next, then, like, that's kind of whatever. I'd rather see him feud with Adam Cole again. But, like, Adam Cole is still injured and should feud with MJF next. So, yeah. But good to see the change. Like a title change, it was the only one we saw, right? So.
Yeah, O'Reilly wouldn't even need eye black in baseball. He wouldn't need eye black on the brightest of days.
I would say it's a B.
B for that one. Okay, yeah. Chris, let's talk about FTR and Moxley and Castagnoli. So basically, FTR is in their home state. They take the L in this case. Is FTR on the way down? And what do you think is the grade for this match when you were looking at it?
I don't know. Like, I don't even, like, even trying to recall, like, I don't remember much about it. So I don't think it was one that I was into the most. I'm not a Moxley fan. I'm not a Moxley fan. I never really have been. I used to love Cesaro, but now I can kind of see why. Like, he also doesn't really do it for me anymore. FTR had such a good run. Like, they had such a good run, and I like their work. They work hard. They're so solid as a tag team. They're like the last bastion of tag teams with the Young Bucks, I find. That match, yeah, C+. I'd probably give it a C+. It didn't grab my attention as much, because I love FTR. I love them, just from, like, even their 70s music coming in. But this one didn't grab me the way I thought it did, and I think part of that had to do with, because, like, I'm not a big Blackpool Combat Club fan, so I think that might have taken it away from me. But C+. Wasn't my favorite match.
Yeah, this match was actually a lot better than I think a C+, but you know what? In a lot of cases, everybody's a little different. I mean, if those people don't do it for you, I totally get it, right? But I think the challenge here is that basically, like, it just seems that FTR the last couple of months just seem to be kind of on a little bit of a decline, and I don't know, maybe they just need a little bit of a break here. But it's like these guys have been going at it now for a week, or a little bit close to a month. They've had a couple matches already before the pay-per-view, and I think that was done to try to be a lead up, and I think it kind of hurt them a little bit. The IWC has it as a higher rated match of the evening, but I kind of agree with you, Chris. I don't have it as a C+, but I had it as at around a B is where I had it. Now, Josh, you get the last one. So we're gonna give you the world championship match there, the AEW World Heavyweight Championship between Hangman Page, your boy Swerve Strickland, and Samoa Joe in that one. So what were your thoughts of that match as a whole? Are you happy with what happened, and does it really set Swerve on this this uphill paddle to superstardom?
I mean, I'm always happy when I predict the result correctly, almost exactly how they booked it. With Samoa Joe to win and them continuing the feud, very clearly that was the way that they were going to go. So, you know, kind of disappointed that that is the way they go. Speculation that the end and finish was that Adam Page was so adamant that Swerve didn't win is that he tapped on purpose so that Swerve couldn't win, which is kind of like, why be in the match? So I've read that that kind of made it worse for other people. That doesn't really bother me, to be honest with you. Like, to be honest, like, I'm okay with that, and I really enjoy that, because fuck Adam Page, turn him heel like you're doing, and I love to see a good turn, baby. And I think that if he threw the match just because Swerve got in his head so hard, that's what he's done. And this is now the arc of his character, because like he was such a big baby face, like at least as long as I've been watching, he's always been the biggest baby face or like one of the biggest baby face. And like, I'm not really like super keen on his stick. I like his wrestling. I'm just not keen. I'm not an American. And it kind of feels like you got like that country boy American kind of style, like that kind of
cowboy.
And that's not my thing. And it's okay. That's okay. That's not my thing. You know, like I'm a Bret Hart through and through. I'm not a cowboy guy. So like watching him turn heel makes me happy. And so I think like the way that it finished was exactly how it is. I'm disappointed that Swerve didn't win the title. I still think he's going to be the first black champion for AEW. He deserves it. But now he's going to move on a face run. And I hope that he takes it from Joe. But if this gets us 2 or 3 more really fucking great matches between him and Adam Page, I'll watch that all fucking year. I'll watch death matches. I mean, I just don't know how they do anymore. And if this is just a way to get Adam Page to then beat Swerve, I'm not interested in that, because Swerve needs to get his flowers. He deserves to have a championship. I don't think he's even had a championship in AEW, not an individual championship.
Tag title.
Yet, maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, which is nothing. Not to say it's not nothing, but when you're a singles wrestler, that's not what you're there for, right? He had it because it developed his character arc, but I really think that he needs that championship title. I don't think that there's a secondary title. Now that he's already said he's going to be the first black champion, I think that that's the only championship I see in my mind. And it's not because I think that he can't hold any other title. I just think that he has shown what he can do. He's gotten over as a heel, is now a face, doing face things, and like he might drag Princess Nana with him, but it's more likely that Nana turns on him and stays heel and keeps that dumb faction together, like the rest of the faction. I like Swerve's faction, but like you can't be a baby face with a heel faction at the same time. So like he's either going to be a tweener, and for the length of this segment that they're going to have together on the program, it's very clear that Adam Page is now the heel in this feud. So I'd say this is a B plus. The wrestling wasn't anything spectacular. I think like in a trios, in a three way match like this, it's going to be hard to have a perfect spots. Joe's style is it does not to say that it doesn't go well with these guys. It's just that like the story is about their feud continuing, and Joe was kind of just like a pawn in it. He did great, but he played the part that he was supposed to play, win the title, and keep that story.
He came out so hot.
It was great.
Joe came out hot and then did the walk away like literally 2 minutes into the match. I loved it.
Absolutely. And it was a great, it was almost immediate. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. Right. And it was good. And it developed the character of Swerve, because there was times where he could have went to pin Joe and he didn't, right? Like he did the double stomp on him or his stomp, and then he went after Paige because he's so in his head. So it's like now that's having an effect on the face of Swerve, even though, you know, he broke into Adam Page's house recently and the fans still love him. Like he broke into his baby's house. Swerve is a killer. He's not supposed to be a face, but he got over. I like it.
And I get it. Sorry to cut you off, Matt. I kind of get why you wouldn't put the belt on Swerve here, because it was Sting's night. So it kind of wasn't that, because like if Swerve won here, it's kind of not the big main event. It's not the big win he should get. So I'm happy. I wanted him to win, but I'm actually happy he didn't. I think he deserves a bigger platform when he gets it.
I think we all agree with that. I don't think Swerve was ever going to win here anyways. Like really, even if Sting wasn't the main event, I don't think that it would go over. I still think that they'd run the same finish the way it was. I personally think Swerve's time is not right now. They're trying to develop that build up to give it to him, but he will get it, and he will get it this year. So the question is when. And that's really the big one. Maybe at Double or Nothing. Maybe at it'd be really interesting if he did get it at Wembley. That'd be crazy. If he got it at Wembley.
That'd be
right?
Huge. Yeah.
So big stuff there. Good point.
It's got to be this year though. It's got to be 2024.
Yeah. And I think when you look at the grade of this, I don't think we'd score this pay per view anything less than an A. I think I would go out on a limb. Does anybody have it at less than an A?
No.
No, and I would say that, like, this was the first AEW pay-per-view that I've watched that I didn't fall asleep. Because, like, it was long, but the matches kept me really interested in it. Like, and even though they did have a few clunkers or a few whatever, but they didn't, like, they didn't go on for 20 minutes. And then, like, they didn't draw my attention. Like, I think that the Julia Hart match in that opening segment was probably the worst match of the night, in my opinion. But other than that, I think that most of the matches were fantastic and they kept your attention. It was hard to follow a couple of the matches, but it was great.
This is the first one I literally sat and watched through the whole thing. My wife watched it. My dog apparently loves Will Ospreay because she hates everything. Yeah. And it's like,
you didn't watch the whole one live. Like, you left early. You think that's what this one was, is that you could sit through it. You didn't even watch the whole one live.
Even going back and watching it.
You gotta beat the crowd, man. You gotta beat the crowd.
Even going back and watching it was worthwhile. And I think that's my pro tip for any viewer out there that listens to this. If, like, no offense to, like, whoever, you can buy it wherever you want, but the smarter buy is to buy it on Triller TV and then you can watch it back as many times as you want. So, like, I think that's where you want to go with that. And that's, like, I'm not promoting Triller TV, but if you are a wrestling fan that wants to keep your library for what you paid, that's the best way to do it, for real. Because I think I have every AEW pay-per-view going back, like, 4 years now, other than the first year. So, and I think you can even go back and still get those ones and have a full collection if you wanted to, which is great. So if you like that shit, do it that way. Now,
yeah, this, a little this bit is scarce. easily top four of their pay-per-views.
Yeah. Yep. We're running a little bit scarce on time. We're going to bring up one last topic. It's Dynamite Wednesday here for AEW, and this is an all AEW show that we got going on tonight. Rumor mill coming through and a couple rumors that Kazuchika Okada is going to be coming on Dynamite tonight and basically proving to everybody that he's all elite. So this is a rumor that we've heard on more than one site. Now, I don't really know where I want to go with my questions. We all know what Kazuchika Okada can bring to the table. He's the Rainmaker. Chris loves his theme music. We've heard that about 17 times on this podcast. But my question to Josh is a little bit off there. If Kazuchika Okada comes out tonight, and I know that we're not long-term booking him on first night, but let's say 3 months from now you have him, where would you like to see him in the AEW roster, and where would you like to see him working with going towards something? Like, because he is a little bit of an older established Japanese wrestler, he has his own clientele, like his own following, he's gonna have to get over like Ospreay did. So first 3 months, where do you see Kazuchika Okada and where would you put him as the booker?
Man, I think that you've got to kind of put him with some of your better wrestlers that have worked with him in Japan. It's like a Moxley, Eddie Kingston kind of, like, I think I'm worried that, like, he's not, like, he's obviously hit his peak, that, like, he's going to have a hard time adjusting to the AEW style, and he's not going to be as good as we hope he to be. Like, I think he's great when he fought Danielson. I just think that, like, he doesn't have that many of those matches left in him. So I think he really needs to be put in with the best wrestlers in the world. Like, I don't think he shouldn't be in with green guys, because he's not there to teach people how to wrestle. And he needs, if you want to, like, give him those matches and present him in a way that he's going to do well, he needs to be going with those guys that he's wrestled with before. Like I said, with, like, the Moxleys, with the Danielsons, with the, you know, Jericho, he'll probably have a match with Jericho just because Jericho seems to have a match with everybody. But, you know, I'm not sure. I could see him with a Ricky Starks would be a good person to put him with. Only because, you know, if he's a face, Ricky Starks is a, you know, he's good in ring. And or maybe even, I don't know, Daniel Garcia is kind of, I think that, like, he has to be with guys who aren't learning the ropes, kind of thing. He's got to be with guys who are, I'd say, well established, but can hold a good match together, because one, they're going to have a language barrier. Two, like, you know, you just hope that it's not like Ibushi coming back, where he's, like, you know, not as physically capable. And, like, I've only seen him wrestle once, and, you know, you worry that, like, that style, the not being in the Japanese style, is going to be different for him. So we'll see. Hopefully,
Chris,
fingers crossed.
Chris, Chris, you book. Where's he going? Where are you putting him?
I mean, him and Omega had a really good run in NJP. They had, like, a best of three, right? In the what's the big thing in Japan? Sorry.
Say that again.
What's the big thing in Japan?
Wrestle Kingdom,
like in the tournament, they had good matches.
No, that's a G1 Climax.
They've done bangers together. So obviously there's going to be a spot for that. Okada is getting a little older, and you do kind of have to pair him with somebody who, you know, yeah, Josh is right. You can't pair him with somebody who's green. And that's also not why Okada's there, right? If he said no to WWE and he's coming there, he's going to want to be a star and he's going to want to do what he wants to do. Jericho, I think they've wrestled before as well. Or was that? Naito. That was Naito.
Yeah, you're right. But I think he has wrestled Okada actually too. I think the first time that I think he either went after Okada or Tanahashi the first time he was there. It wasn't Naito and the first time. The second time was right. Naito.
They have fought though.
So like that's another opportunity to kind of go back, run those back. Maybe like something eventually with him and Takeshita. You know, like the passing of the torch or something, or a little feud with like the up and coming Japanese wrestler and like the old guard, both in the States, to see like that's something I'd like to see. I just thought of that. That actually would interest me a lot. Other than that, who else would you? Danielson again, when Danielson's healthy, I think that's a worthwhile match to make. And I think him and Hangman could actually probably have a pretty decent match in the ring. How the story like comes out of that, I'm not sure, but I think ring wise they would work together.
I got 2 minutes here that I'm going to use and just kind of go through this. I think that one of the challenges that you have with Japanese coming over to North America, and in some cases the North Americans going over to Japanese when they aren't well known, is the fact that regardless of their stature in the country they came from, they partially still aren't well known. You know, look, Will Ospreay is the number one wrestler in the world, but how many people in North America have watched Will Ospreay? If you didn't watch NJPW, who knew about him? You know, you found out about him through AEW. First thing I would do is one of two things with Okada. One, he becomes the lead guy in what's his face's stable, Don Callis's stable at that point. So you could have something where they kick out Ospreay, they kick out Kyle Fletcher, and we make a Japanese. Like, I would love to see Don Callis as a spokesman in an all Japanese fucking super group. That'd be fantastic. Even if you were to keep Ospreay as the one white guy that's there, like, you know, other than Callis, like that's in the group, that'd be kind of cool too, because that's kind of like there's a TV show where that's going on right now too, which is kind of interesting. But everything in my head as a booker tells me to say, if I want him over as Japanese coming into the North American audience, is to have him and Christian Cage fight for the title. And I think Christian Cage is not going to be a guy where he's going to rely on, oh, Kazuchika Okada, where's your dead dad? Like, it's, you know, like it gets him out of that stick a little bit, but it gets him into a thing now where you have a legitimate contender. And how can Okada fight through all this stuff? And it's either going to get Okada, it's going to get Okada way over to the North American audience. And then, you know, even if he doesn't win the title, it's going to be a scenario where you can go either way and he's still going to get over and he's going to be with a top end North American star in a promo battle. And I think that's really kind of what I would like to see in that scenario. Is it the best possible match? Maybe not. I mean, you know, we can put him in a match with Omega or anybody and have a five or a six star, right? But I think at the end of the day, the key is how do you get him over with the North American demographic? With a language
barrier. Hard.
And I think
it's
you got to
so
do
hard.
It. You have to do it with somebody that's North American to really get them across. Right. That's
and
my
we've,
thought.
We've
it.
Seen it time and time before. Like there's a reason why Okada and Ospreay aren't going to WWE. Cause like WWE is so promo driven and so like hard in that, but these guys tell the story in the ring and do all the work in the ring. So it's kind of like for fans that are, like more smart marks, right, for them, because you want to see the story being told in the ring. We don't care. We love good promos, obviously, but we don't care as much about those.
Look what happened in the WWE right now with Damage Control, right? Bayley's not the face of it anymore. We have three people that barely speak English that are running that group in Dakota Kai, and they're over for their in-ring ability, but they're not over for, because they can't communicate as well as everybody else. It was like, Chris, back in the day, you had Kai and Tai, where you had, literally had Dick Togo running that group. You had Sho Funaki, you had Takamichinoku, and none of them could speak English. And Dick Togo said that he was going to choppy choppy Val Venus's penis, and that was the most recognizable thing that anybody remembers. Everybody remembers Tajiri for the mist. Everybody remembers Muda in North America for the mist. Everybody manages Yoshitatsu. Does anybody remember Yoshitatsu? Nobody remembers Yoshitatsu. Who
he broke his like, AJ Styles about, broke his neck. I remember that.
You're right. We had to think about, you know, Masato Tanaka. We had to think about like the only one that's mainstay right now and the only one that's there is still Shinsuke Nakamura. And what did they have to do? They had to go back and make him into a Japanese anime character because of the slight language barrier that's there. He can speak English, but he doesn't speak great English. So what do? They put drawings on the screen like he's going to shinobi chop somebody in the fucking neck. And then he looks super cool. And then he gets over. Right. So the question is, how do you take a Japanese star like Takeshita and build him into a North American sensation? That's the question. How do you do it with Okada coming over and not wreck the legacy of Kazuchika Okada? That's what needs to be seen right now. Now
you have to book it. You have to book it right because you know correct. If you bring them in and you try to make them like say an English promo, that it's not going to work. Like they do their work in the ring, and you have to find a way to book them smart where you accentuate that work in the ring. And every once in a while, yeah, you do have them, or you have a handler with them because
Don like, Callis.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Now, Josh. It's time to finish off the show. We're getting to the end of it. Since we had problems with the loading of the sound, we're going to sing, 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 sing. Basically, what slice is your salami, sir?
Yes. So what slice is my salami? Let me pull my thing up here. Also, word of the day, Chris said bastion. Had to look that one up. It's a stronghold, a fortified area or position. Word of the day.
Keep bastion's key.
Bastion's key. Okay.
Bastion Booger.
So I noticed this a couple times in the AEW pay-per-view. I believe it happened during the FTR match. You know what really slices my salami? When someone breaks up the pin, but they don't actually break it up, and the shoulders remain on the mat with the guy on top of them, and it's no finish. That should be a finish. That's the three count. And it happened when I believe FTR was a little late. It was Dax Harwood was a little late to the party. And you know how I like my wrestling to be real. If you're going to have reels, why not enforce them? That's what really slices my salami.
It happened in one of the first two matches, too, where they kind of did the arm underneath thing. And they were like, oh, yeah. And like the guy was there for 5 seconds. Like it was bad.
Oh, it's bad. The AEW refs, there's one, maybe two. Good AEW refs. Aubrey is probably my favorite. There's the one guy with his hair pushed down like this, and it's like yeah, really, really bad. I want to give him a haircut. His hair
Knox,
so bad.
There's like, Mike like Knox this, as well.
Not, yeah, I don't know. But next time you see him, you'll see him. He's got the old pushy downy hair. I don't know. It's a longy short pack.
They call that a vertical George Clooney.
There you go. Yeah, it hasn't been popular ever.
We need what? Kevin Patrick?
What? Yeah, Kevin Patrick. Patrick
from
I think.
WCW. Yeah. Remember him? Like the guy who joined the NWO at one point?
Oh, Nick Patrick.
Nick Patrick. And then we have Mickey J. Mickey J, too.
Oh, Mickey J, too.
Little Nate.
Oh, Little Nate.
Did you hear? Did you guys hear?
Not Mickey J. Mickey J was the heavy one, Chris. Charles Robinson was Little Nate.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Little Nate.
Chris, Josh, go ahead.
Did you guys hear Michael Cole said that Sting had retired officially on Raw yesterday or Monday? So
they wouldn't give up any of his goddamn video.
It's interesting though. I think that it's been really good with WWE with how they're actually like going outside of like what Vince would ever let them do, and I think that like it's great. Like why are we pretending that there's not anybody else in the world and WWE has its own universe? Like
absolutely, it exists. Sure. Why not talk about
should
it?
Should have saved that one for a slice of your salami because the show's over.
No, I know it doesn't slice my salami. I'm glad that the reign of terror is over.
No, it's for sure, and I agree. You know what? I think Sting being acknowledged and having a thing, like, if you left WWE on good terms, why not recognize it? I mean, it's not doing any, like, it's not, you're not going to have 10 million people turn to AEW because they said something nice about Sting, right? Like, that's just stupid thinking on a lot of people's parts. But Chris, with you know, with all the stuff that's going on, we're at the end of the show. Anything to add before we close her off?
Yeah, like I'm looking forward to AEW a little bit more now. I think they need to kind of gain a little bit back for me after World's End. I like what I see. I like what I see with WWE now too, which has been hard to watch for me in the last little while, but I have been tuning in. Love The Rock going heel, to the fact that he has to explain to Marks that he's not that bad of a guy. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to continuing the pod and seeing what we have in store for 2024, because so far it's shaping up to be pretty good.
You got it, brother. 10 minutes to Dynamite, 6 weeks to WrestleMania. Josh, finish off the cast. Anything left for you?
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for Dynamite. And it's going to be a banger of a year. Let's go.
Okay. That being said, wherever you are in the world, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night from the Rub Wrestling Podcast. Matt, Chris, Josh, we all bid you adieu. Bang. Because the beat's running copacetic. When it all falls down, I hope you don't forget it. Necro City, son of anarchy, the hype demanded me. Mikey damage, showed you amateurs, the cost of vanity. So fuck humanity, flow we murder open-handedly. Most of my clique, yo, they come from broken families. The world that we know it is coming to a close, y'all. Can't find peace in a world full of soldiers. Can't stop getting all down. Up north, when the streets run cold out.